Streamyard says I have a less optimal signal, but
whatever. Well, you are in the basement after all.
Welcome to the Chaplain Sisters Motor Pod. I am your host, Gary, and this is the podcast where I discuss my world of G.I. Joe, and usually I review a vehicle or playset from the G.I. Joe Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to present day. This is a special episode, as earlier this morning, in a spur-of-the-moment decision, I decided to record with my good friend, all the way from the other side of the world, in the future, 14 hours. Steve, how are you doing today?
Gary, excited is the word, but it feels like there should be a whole a whole lot of other words that should come after that, because this is the big one. This is what we've all been waiting for. Those of us who've had a hankering for O-rings, everything else was just a substitute at this point. This feels like the main event. But I feel like I've jumped the gun, haven't I?
A little bit. A little bit of a teaser. Never hurt anybody. But what we're talking about
what is he talking about?
is Super Saiyan dropped the pre-order for the Cobra Mothership, most famously known for the as the introduction for the first full season of the Sunboat G.I. Joe cartoon, coming in at 31 inches wide with a host of accessories and a funding goal. $495 and 4,000 backers gets this thing into production. And it started as a little chat between Steve, myself, and some other podcasting friends, Jason and Joel from Order of Battle and Anything Joe's respectively. And what can we say? I think we were a little surprised by the enormity and the fact that rings may be included.
Well, yes. I mean, let's unpack that. Of course, this is geared towards Super 7's reaction action figure line, which are the 5 points of articulation guys. But it has long been rumored that Super 7 always had an eye on doing O-ring style figures and were barred from acting on that by Hasbro's mandate. Hasbro, it seems, has no further interest in producing O-rings of their own. And so it seems like it has been proclaimed. And so now it shall come to pass. Super 7 are now going to go forward and make their own O-rings. This thing at least guarantees you one in the box as part of the base offering.
Well,
there is the opportunity to buy an expansion on that.
I think the way I'm reading it is the expansion is currently available, but the one included with the initial offering is the 7,000 piece stretch goal. The way I was reading the website.
Okay. Right. I see a different colorway kind of creepy in at 7,000, but don't take our word for it, guys. Check super7.com and read through the brief yourselves. But I do believe it's, you know, if this thing makes it into production, there will at least be one new style of O-ring action figure in the world. It's a sort of a Viper, but modified, I suppose, to be able to work in an unpressurized cabin at altitude. So he's got a little mask in front of his mirror face.
The easiest way I would describe it, Steve, is it's the 1986 Viper with the 1994 Viper head. My biggest thing with this thing is this podcast, you know, covers vehicles, playsets, and even trailers from the 3¾ and 4 toy lines, and sometimes dipping into classified. But, you know, G.I. Joe 1982 was essentially supposed to be a vehicle line as described by Kirk Bozigian in various interviews, with the action figures supplementing the vehicles. And so seeing a brand new vehicle for the toy line for me is really exciting, that it's not a retread of an existing toy from our past. It's something new to market that a company with the G.I. Joe license is essentially taking a chance on. I think that that alone, you know, this first broke in San Diego Comic-Con, and we were all like, oh yeah, it's going to be a reaction line. It's going to have a reaction style trouble bubbles. But I don't think anybody was ready for the news of the O-rings being licensed. I believe it was Full Force having the interview with Super 7 where they said they went after the O-rings, and then Hasbro said no. This is something I think you talked about on your podcast recently about death of O-rings. And then I commented is, why don't they just let somebody else take the financial risk and just license it out? And it seems like that's exactly what they're trying. That's what they're feeling out here now, is that idea.
Well, let's over and under it, Gary. Will this fund, and to what extent? Because it all hinges on whether or not there are, in fact, enough of us out there to bring back the O-ring kicking and screaming. Well, Hasbro had a different model when they came to it. You know, it was a Hasbro Pulse exclusive. You could get them in those two packs. It was a kind of an awkward, haphazard way of hopefully issuing them back. And then of course, there was the HasLab Sky Striker. All of these were kind of non-starters. Is this a successful way, formula, for us to express our interest and draw a line in the sand and say, there are enough of us out there for this to be viable? Are we going to make it, Gary?
Are we going to make it? Well, let's discuss, you know, the price, you know, $495 before shipping. I think that is going to play a huge role in the level of funding. I think the 4,000 goal is attainable because it's a Super 7, not Hasbro Pulse. I think you brought it up in our earlier conversation that Super 7's worldwide distribution could probably bolster sales, because now it's not limited to the few international outlets that Hasbro Pulse is among the United States, quite obviously the largest market for it. It's $500. I'm thinking goal right
now. That seems on par for Super 7. They are not cheap. And yet they still are able to fund their extremely expensive and ambitious projects. I mean, we haven't spoken at all about the merits of this thing. We'll get into it, I guess. The base offering, its construction, and the amount of care and detail that has gone into it. But are there really more Thundercats diehards with the kind of spending power that the Thunder Tank took to push that past the line? Are there not more O-ring G.I. Joe fans out there?
I bet you there's more O-ring G.I. Joe fans. I think it comes from the fact that the O-ring G.I. Joe fans have a wealth of toys already to choose from. Let's talk about the market. I think the market for this is somebody that doesn't have a flag, doesn't have a Defiant, as those are some grail items that command at least three times the price point of this at the moment. That helps. But then the other side of the market is those that already have everything and they need to get that next thing. And that's kind of where I'm mostly at. I've completed my 80s collection for a long time now, having one of everything in the 1980s, with the exception of Heavy Metal's Mike. So
all is forgiven. Though, Gary,
I can buy a Mike versus this. The Mike will cost me as much as this.
It's true. But look, it has been made plain on the internet, and I've suddenly become aware of it, that the heavy metal microphone is so small that it was even omitted in factory sealed samples. So in the factory itself, it went missing before making it into the bubble. So you can consider your heavy metal factory complete as a result. You just got the dud, you know, the one that didn't have it in the bubble.
Now I can rest easy tonight.
Exactly. You're welcome.
Thank you. But I don't like this thing's huge, and I think it will fund. I think what's going to help it fund is the figure packs, the 5-piece figure packs of O-ring and Reaction Line, attractively priced, I might add, at $75 for 5 figures. So that's $15 a fig,
which is a better value proposition than Hasbro's 2-packs, which were just north of what, $20 a piece.
About $22 a piece.
There you go.
Knowing that Super 7's 5-point of articulation figures are of high quality, and if O-ring, let's say if Super 7 had begun making the O-ring figures without Hasbro's restriction on it, I think I would have gone all in buying O-ring Super 7 figures to supplement my vintage-ish collection. Steve, you are a stalwart for the vintage stuff. What is your opinion on third-party producing O-ring licensed figures? Would you go all in at a, let's say, 20 American US dollars?
Well, that is the asking price from all the third-party producers at the moment. We're just waiting for which one's going to deliver first. If we take Black Mage off the table and just discuss the, what is it, Heavy Armor Toys, it's long call sign Longbow, it's obviously the Carson Metaxas-led Operation Recall figures, Hidden Force, the Ninjas. Gosh, there are plenty more, I'm sure. The Wolf Trooper from RoboSkull, they're doing a three-quarter-inch O-ring figure. So we're patiently waiting for one of these to deliver and get a feel for what this new era of retro figures feels like. Certainly enough pains have been made to point out that they're going to have the feel of the originals, plus a few bells and whistles, maybe like removable heads and wrist articulation, at the least. I mean, some of them go even further than that. But we haven't had the blind Coke test yet. We haven't had them in hand just yet. So there's no telling where on the spectrum they fit. Will they feel more like a vintage Core figure? Will they feel like a vintage Joe figure? Will they feel somewhere in between? Will they feel like the figures from the early 2000s, the G.I. Joe Real American Hero Collection? We don't know. But at the same time, does it matter? They can feel like their own thing as long as they are still a high-quality product. Certainly the accessories that the Reaction figures come with are high quality. I do like the XMLRs, the pistols, the bazookas, the various accessory pieces that have come in Reaction figure packs. The grip is perhaps slightly ill-fitting for the C grip of a classic O-ring figure. So hopefully these new figures will have accessories that are accommodating. But for the most part, at least the quality and the plastic and the design and the detail of the accessories is an easy match. I can happily put that with my vintage collection. The figures are the big question mark. But hopefully we'll know this time next year, right? October 2024 is the scheduled arrival date. Provided we don't have another pandemic or, I don't know, World War in that interim. Here's to hoping.
Yeah, that's a hot button topic. But I can say right now, let's say the retail market, the mass retail market has shifted to 6-inch, which leaves unfortunately for a variety of reasons, you know, the 3.75 and 4-inch markets are becoming more boutique. I would say that given that, based on discussions I've had, that the cost of producing a 3.75/4-inch toy versus a 6-inch toy are approximately the same, and there's a more perceived value at 6-inch versus 3.75. The other big thing is the fact that 6-inch guys are action figure collectors. The 3.75 and 4-inch guys are toy line collectors, where, like me, and the focus of this podcast, you know, the vehicles matter, you know, the bases matter. Setting up a diorama in a compact space, you know, space matters, but also the overall creating an environment for the figures that, you know, you can leave on a desk, you can leave on a shelf, is much more conceivable at a 1/18 scale versus a 1/12 scale. It's not to say the 6-inch stuff isn't gorgeous, but when space is at a premium, you know, our dollars are at a premium. And I think personally, I get more bang for the buck with 4-inch, but again, I am apparently minority, not the market that is obviously setting the trend. I would give these guys, if Super 7 single carded 3.75 figures at $20 to $25, I would still, you know, I at least pick a couple up before I made a judgment on their toy line as a whole, just because of their reputation.
But here's another thing to consider, Gary, and I realize I didn't actually answer the question. I got off on a tangent. But Super 7 has insane amounts of distribution. Super 7 don't seem to struggle to bring these toys in their droves to just about every kind of pop culture, even bookstores carry reaction figures. If they can achieve the same levels of distribution with O-ring figures and it becomes easy to pick them up, all of a sudden that price point seems a little bit more attractive. You're not having to go to the legwork. You know, it's staring you in the face. I can very easily justify $20 to $25 spend on something if it's presented to me in the store. If I have to go out of my way online, source it from a seller, have it shipped to me, there are all these layers of prohibition. Whereas, you know, the impulse buy of seeing it in stores, like I can walk down the road and buy a 5POA reaction figure. Just imagine if they actually stocked figures that I wanted. I'd be a mess. I'd have to buy them all. Okay. Look, maybe I won't. Maybe at $25, I have to be realistic and think to myself, I'm going to pick and choose. But I'm definitely going to play ball. This is going to get me off the bench, man. Big time.
Yeah.
If distribution is good.
Correct. And that was why I said set the price point where I said it, because I feel that with the licensing fee that they got to pay plus the manufacturing costs, and Super 7 is run by fans. You know, they run by collectors. They're run by guys that are enthusiastic about the product. So I think all of that plays into the fact of the cost being where I believe it would be in the future. That said, I think at $15 per figure included with the Cobra mothership is, you know, I think that's a deal. And I think that's kind of in line with where everybody thinks that Hasbro should be with 3.75 figures if they decided to do it.
Let's also consider the fact that they're army builders. I mean, you're getting five of the same figure.
It is. It's good bang for the buck. And, you know, I think it's exciting to see a mass market / potential mass market return to retail of O-ring. And I don't know. It's really exciting. It's really spur the imagination of what could be next.
I think this is not good enough for you. Come on, Gary. This is incredible. We've spoken a lot about the return of O-rings, but can we get into this Behemoth.
The ship. Yeah, the Behemoth.
Please.
So, yeah. So
big playsets excite everybody. I don't care what your bent is, but just seeing an environment that is fully realized in plastic, that has compartments, nooks, crannies. Paul from G.I. Joburg likes to think of it as like a treasure box that you can open up and then just inspect all the jewels inside, these sort of hidden passageways and cupboards and armories and bomb bays. I mean, everything opens and shuts on this. They did their homework. They hit us right in the sweet spot.
So right now, for those listening at home, we're currently on the Cobra Mothership website on Super 7, taking a look at the pictures. So if you're listening along, you know, go to super7.com, search for the Cobra Mothership. You should find out digital renderings and some actual pictures of what we're talking about. And it opens up with the front view of it staring at you like it's coming at you, like the Sunbow opening credits. And it's big. It's gray with those red translucent eyes. And, you know, it moves on to a three-quarter view with an explosion back, which, again, you know, that's hitting us vintage guys right in the feels. The next thing I gotta point out is the digital rendering of the mothership hovering over the ground with 9 Vipers that I can count. And Steve's favorite part of any modern toy, blast effects, keeping it hovering in the air.
You had to go there.
I know it's a pet peeve of yours, but I got to point it out.
I'll give it a pass because this thing doesn't have landing gear. I mean, I'm glad that none of the internal space is given over to have recesses to hold wheels, because we never see this thing on wheels. It would probably also betray the scaling cheat that they had to do with it. You know, if you had giant landing gear, would that be literally giant landing gear if you were playing this as a kind of a 1 to 100 scale? So yeah, it's got these blast effects that are holding it up, which at least that way you can kind of get something underneath it if you want to keep using that shelf for other things like figures. I think the height is worked out that a figure can stand beneath it and just barely get under. Yeah, that seems logical. So yeah, in this case, Gary, I'm not gonna mind it. I might have preferred a sort of in-universe like a docking stand of some kind, but it ain't bad. I do have one nitpick that came to me this morning, actually. This thing has got lighting inside it, right? But all the lighting are sort of downlights from underneath the vessel to basically light the ground beneath it. And I think that's perhaps a waste of resources. If you are going to wire it up and have lighting, why not make it the internal spaces that are lit instead of making it external lights? Like the computer screens could be lit, the panels, the flooring. That would be much more useful diorama-wise and play-wise than just downlighting, lighting the ground beneath it.
Well, I will counterpoint. I will say that lighting the underneath is
thrusters.
But thrusters, but also if you have it hovering over characters or other features of a diorama, you know, figures, toys or whatever, that thing also brings out the toys underneath it from shadow. So if you have this on display, which we'll get to it, if you buy it and you have to display it, I'll be honest, I'm not going to play with it for every minute of every day after I get it. It's probably going to be displayed a lot before I make the whoosh whoosh sounds. But I think the lighting helps, you know, helps those that have it displayed as a diorama. That being said, your idea of the backlit interior makes, I absolutely see your point and understand why you see that point and that nitpick.
I love the HasLab his tank and Dragonfly. Like, I think that's the best addition that they've made, just to give life to those screens and the opacity as well. Like, the sort of the way the plastic transmits the light as well. I mean, if it works like it works in their presentations and videos, that kind of makes me wish that, I mean, on this, you could light that globe. Imagine if there was a bulb inside that. So you had glowing blue and green globe in the control room. All the computer screens would look so great with a little bit of backlight. But hey, look, this is perhaps even a customizer's dream, because it's an expensive base model, but you could, I suppose, carve out little bits and nooks and add little battery boxes and additional LEDs, give it some more light and life.
And I'm sure somebody's thinking about that right now.
Absolutely. You know, well, if you have that much ability, perhaps you should be better off, you know, carving your own, because it's a heavy ask for a custom project.
All right. Yeah. So we move into the overview of the interior of the mothership, and I'm getting some awesome vibes with two parachutes. You know, that's, I mean, and you're just looking, you got a control room, you got a background. It looks like you even have a little bit of a brig.
Yes. With the signature pterodrome red sliding slatted gate or prison door. There's even a poster inside with a picture of Cobra Commander battle helmet. And I wish I could read the lettering, but I bet it's something to the effect of like obey Cobra or something like that. It's and apparently they sculpted handcuffs in the brig. You mentioned the parachutes, but they're actually sort of like parachute bins for the parachutes to be folded and stored on either side of the loading ramp. Yeah, I think you can see them there.
Yeah, hold on. Ooh, there's the plus sign. Hail Cobra.
Hail Cobra, lovely. On either side of the ramp are deployable bombs that then would drop out of the bottom of the craft.
I mean, it's loaded with features, and man,
it, Steve, where once again, is in step with previous precedent of G.I. Joe playsets in that it has no bathroom.
You know, when you're busy taking over the world, you know, depends, and you get a Sandy Viper to, you know, take care of you.
Hey, buddy, it just occurred to me as well, though, that with those sort of bomb dropping mechanisms, essentially you've got a long drop on standby. You can sort of line your troopers up over the bomb bay doors. Ha ha ha, toilet humor makes its way onto Chaplain Assistance Motorpod.
That never happens.
Classy affair. I've been sharing a picture of what looks like the O-ring Super 7 figure holding his rifle with both hands every time someone says, "Oh, it looks like they don't have swivel arm battle grip."
I just drop
that picture and run.
And that was the biggest thing. So some people thought that these might be straight arms, and I've only found one picture with the swivel arm. Yeah, now that we're back to O-rings again.
It would make no sense for them to go straight arm. I mean, their whole thing is to get away from the reaction mannequin stance with these. I mean, why would they skip such an important innovation as the swivel arm? There absolutely is a picture of the Viper, or whatever they call him, the gunner, holding his Viper rifle in with, you know, well, I wouldn't say accommodating it. There we go. Okay. Yes. He swiveled his arm towards the left.
I'm going to switch over to the Facebook post I found. Right. So credit where credit's due. This was posted by Eddie Malajadero at New York Comic Con. Found on Facebook in the G.I. Joe Trader PX group. And so happy he took these pictures of the display of the Super 7 booth. And yeah, so in one of the photos, like Steve just said, there's clearly the swivel arms being used, so that these are swivel arm O-ring figures.
But yeah, I can imagine if you've got your prototype samples, you are very, very ginger about posing them, particularly a swivel arm. So a lot of them will be very stiffly posed. But yeah, they've got at least one guy in there demonstrating that, yes, this is a fully articulated, or at least as articulated as an O-ring figure should be. I don't know if they have wrist swivels. Maybe they've decided to be purists and not take on that innovation.
Well, the Vipers, O-ring Vipers, do look to be sharing the forearms of the similar design of the original 86 Viper.
Oh, yeah.
So go back there. So, and I don't see a seam line.
Okay.
When I blew it up earlier today. But
it's anybody's guess. I mean, there are plenty of ridges that could conceal a articulation point. But yeah, I mean, we're zooming in on someone's like cell phone camera picture. It's it's not the most high fidelity.
But yeah, and it's still pretty cool though.
Oh yeah. The speculation now runs rampant. I mean, yeah, this news is barely 24 hours old. And people have Super 7 will no doubt be riding this hype train hard over the whole period of this funding. So these details should be disseminated, you know, in coming days, yeah. In coming weeks. We will know absolutely everything there is to know about this toy as they close in on their goal, whichever stretch we're going to wind up on. I mean, I don't know if I definitively got an answer already, Gary. Do you think this will fund?
Yeah, no, I do. I think it would. It's going to get to the base. I think the G.I. Joe line, I think it's strong enough, like with the HasLab Sky Striker, it definitely will fund. I don't think it will fund as far as the Sky Striker did with the price point, because there were guys, I know one that lives in my house, that bought five of them. Granted, some of them were for friends. All right, you're putting me on the spot, Steve. I'm going to say right now, I'll put it at tier two will fund. I think we'll get to 6,000 units. That's where I'm going to say. I think what's going to stop
tier two, the gun chairs.
Yes. Tier three is the figures. And I think it's going to stop just short of the figures, because people are going to load up on the also available five-pack figures. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where it's going to end.
Just so that the listeners know what we're talking about, those gun chairs are the classic Destro-occupied sort of turret gun. Who grabs him? Is it Roadblock that grabs him? I don't know. Roadblock manhandles him in the intro sequence. Someone, maybe it's Footloose and Alpine, who get him off that gun chair, and then they toss him about underneath the mothership. But basically, it looks like, if I'm honest, it looks like the front end of a shark with a gun turret sticking out. It's got that kind of same profile. It's got the sort of vented slats. Anyway, there are two of them, and they would attach somehow to the front end of the mothership. So either side of the mouth, you'd have these turret guns.
Yes.
Oh, man. Yes.
Yeah, so.
They look like trouble bubbles as well, in a sense.
Trouble bubbles without the cover.
Mm.
Yeah, I think people, it's going to fund that far. I think, I don't know. I love the molded in the cockpit. I don't even know where to start, because we're just looking at pictures. Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say, let's start at the cockpit and I'll try to get a better view of it.
Which funding goal is the trouble bubble unlock? Is that tier one?
Well,
a pair of trouble bubbles.
We did our research today.
Well, if you listen to this, immediately hop onto super7.com and scream at your radio.
Okay. So tier one bonus is two turrets and one sticker sheet. Gotcha. That's 5,000 backers. The tier two bonus, and I'm not getting paid to promote this, 6,000 backers. Super 7 exclusive variants. The two trouble bubble vehicles will flip up canopy and cannons, each with one mine and two missile accessories. Mm-hmm. So that's 6,000 backers. I think that's, like I said, that's where I'm saying that's where it's ending. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I went looking for parts for a triple bubble for a future review on the Chaplain's Assist Motor Pod, shameless plug, to do a trouble bubble review, because I only have one that I thought was complete. And I couldn't believe that a trouble bubble itself on the secondary market on eBay, if I wanted to just buy one, is about $50. I couldn't believe how expensive they are. And
it's,
I'm just going to say,
big boy game with big boy money nowadays. And sadly,
and I'm not the biggest trouble bubble fan. So I was like,
it's an icon.
I couldn't believe it.
Whether you love it or hate it, like it's part of the tapestry of G.I. Joe. Oh man, look at this. They've just got a wealth of activity happening inside. Okay, I'm going to try and describe some of it for the listeners, but this thing has Millennium Falcon-esque, like, removable covers. Perhaps not deep enough to fit a figure down there, but certainly it's like a love note to all the G.I. Joe vehicles that have engine covers that can reveal more mechanical detail beneath. You can see this sort of the bomb silos where they would be placed. Two Cobra troopers are handling the ordnance in the picture. Something I wanted to also comment on is that the wall thickness of plastic on classic G.I. Joe vehicles, as we know, is pretty thin in a lot of places. It tends more towards model kit. I think that toy laws, being what they are, don't allow toys to be sold with plastic wall thickness that thin, certainly not something this size. So whether we have the legalities to thank, or maybe just this thing's own kind of engineering, it feels like all the walls are very thick, sturdy. This thing hopefully will not be a rickety piece of plastic. So yes, the price tag is hefty, but at least from what I've seen, from what I can gather, from what I can, I don't know, just sleuth out by looking at these pictures, it's going to feel like a plastic brick. And it's going to be hefty and thick and hardy and will possibly survive a drop from the shelf. For those of you who test out their toys with the drop test.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if Hans listens, but I hope he...
Throw it at the wall.
I hope he gets one. But the one thing,
long-winded way of saying, like, I do think, at least in the pictures, it looks like a high quality affair.
Yeah, the three removable covers, each reviewing a third of the ship, central going down the center, and each wing or each side, starboard and port. They're large, but like you said, it's just showing off so much. The back of the cockpit, right, has this globe with the Cobra logo on it in the center. You know, that is an awesome touch of, you know, not only is it the cockpit where they fly, it's the command center, it's the control room, it's where the planning goes. So there's a lot of story that could be told in that, on the bridge, to borrow a Star Trek term or a naval term. So there's a lot of storytelling that you could do on the bridge of the mothership. And on the back wall is the giant Cobra logo. And I haven't gotten a really good picture, but the one I have up on the screen now kind of shows door detail in that Cobra logo for them to walk through. But I don't know, and I can't say if those doors open.
They do. Oh, I can say that.
Lovely.
They do.
Lovely.
And that then allows it to use the property parlance of like easy flow from the cockpit and sort of command area to the troop area, which gives way to the back ramp going down the back. So you can effectively have your Cobra commander with that globe behind him, standing in this arch of the Cobra symbol, addressing the Cobra paratroops that he's about to send into battle. Like there's a wonderful, like deep dio area possibility that exists just in that central cavity alone. The two flanks are obviously computer banks, weapons, the jail on the one side, and the armory on the other side, which has ample space not only for the rifles, but for the backpacks as well. and has a hinged door by the looks of things. Or it slides. No, I think it slides. Okay. It's a sliding door. Yeah, it should be. I mean, it'll take up less space if it has a slide. Oh, yeah. So I feel like we can't do adequate justice. People just need to look at these pictures and pore over them, hopefully with us in their ears. But yeah, take the time, guys. Have a look. Evaluate it yourselves. And hopefully some people out there can bring some actual Super 7 experience to bear. I know I'm going to go over to my mate's place who owns the Thunder Tank and just get an idea of how high quality these things actually are. Because there have been misgivings aplenty on the internet. And I don't know if it's people just hating for hate's sake or if there's actual truth to the fact that Super 7 are maybe not as consistent as we'd like them to be.
And that's a hard part to really be objective about, because everybody's, and especially on these high ticket items, everybody has a different story that to tell, especially with, you know, I think our last conversation on this show was about the HasLab Sky Striker, where we had similar but different experiences with each one that we opened up. And we saw, you know, other, you know, content creators with different issues as well. So, but I don't think Super 7 has suffered from not including the engines of a toy that was supposed to be included. I think the experiences have been more perspective rather than objective, just because, like you said, I haven't hung out with a lot of the Super 7 buyers. I have a few reaction figures because I like the fun that they bring to the toy line or to the G.I. Joe line or just what they like to do. I'm really tempted to buy their Devo figures as a Devo fan. So I like the fact that they're going after cult things. They're going after things that aren't normally in the mainstream. They're bringing exciting things to the market that trigger nostalgia, but they're also kind of new. Like, I would kill for them to do an O-ring version of the blue uniform Baroness from the early comic books in the first G.I. Joe miniseries. They did it in 7-inch form, and I really was close to pulling the trigger on that because I've longed for an original Baroness, because that's a Herb Trimpe design. That is...
Oh, this could be your ticket, Gazza. Here's to hoping, man. Here's to hoping this thing finally discovers this new wave. Finally has perhaps the magic combination to get us back into the market for these toys that we've hankered for. Like, now's the time to show our appreciation.
I think it's time to talk, you know, are we going to get the Cobra Mothership? And it's expensive. I'm going to go out. I'm going to spoil it real quick. I love this thing. I like the fact that Super 7 wants to push the G.I. Joe envelope, and they want to push their license and their ability to, you know, make money themselves and, you know, the licensing fee and paying that so they can continue to be profitable and bringing more things to market. So I'm definitely in this for at least one. I don't know about spending a mortgage payment, you know, getting the second one. I might have to buy a second one for somebody else. There's texting going on behind the scenes with my friend Bjorn from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all ask. It's huge. I'm definitely down for it. And it's funny too, before we get to you, Steve, because I'm interested to know what you say, is like one of the things that Super 7 did. You know, I've gotten the React figure for the Fensler Films parodies. So I have the I'm a Computer and the Body Massage. I didn't get their, what was that 5-pack they produced? It was the oh gosh, from the, was it the first miniseries or the second miniseries where Snake Eyes and Shipwreck are escaping, you know, Hail Cobra Commander, the great snake rules overall. I didn't get that, but Amazon Prime Day was 2 days ago and yesterday, and I bought the Super 7 Escape Pack of Cobra Commander, Barons, and Destro because it was a great deal on Amazon Prime. I didn't have to worry about, I was on the fence at retail, but when it was almost half price, you know, I pulled the trigger because I want to support fun things. And I literally got it a couple hours ago. So Steve, I want to know about you.
Gaza,
where are you at?
Where I'm at is it's too early to see. We don't know if this is coming to the Australian market anywhere near that kind of price range. So we'll find out, I guess. So I can't give you a definitive answer. I also need to duck and run because a very old friend of mine has just called me and through rather tenuous circumstances. So I guess this conversation will have to be a TBC, man.
All right. Well, Steve,
I'll leave you to round out the show. Thank you, listeners, for checking us out.
Thanks for joining me, Steve. God bless and good luck.
Thank you, buddy. Be decent to one another.
You got
later.
It. Later. Well, thank you, Steve, for joining me. Sorry you had to go early. And folks, if you don't realize, Steve is from G.I. Joburg. You can check them out at G.I. Joburg. You can find them easily on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, and Instagram. So, Steve, thanks again, and hope to talk to you soon and find out if you are going to get the Super 7 Cobra Mothership. To summarize, again, these are exciting times to be in 3¾-inch toy collector with all the small companies making their own lines, and now Super 7 also potentially entering the O-ring construction as well. This is a gamble for them. It's their first take of a project like this with G.I. Joe and also trying something new with a 3¾ O-ring line. And it's a calculated risk going after this market. I still stand by my prediction that it will fund 6,000 units. I don't think it will reach 7,000 units with the O-ring and the reaction figure add-ons. I think that this is going to be big news over the next 60 days. Personally, I'm definitely in it for one, probably two, maybe three, if I have to get some for friends. And I want to also quickly touch on a point that Steve made earlier on about that impulse buy when you see something in hand. I saw a Boss Fight Studios Hacks Phantom, and it was $28 at local comic shop, BoomTube Comics, and I picked it up because it was such a sweet figure, and that impulse got me to buy it and experience the Boss Fight action figure in hand. So there's something to be said for putting product to market and having it available in hand. So I wish Super 7 all the best in this product, selfishly, because I'm going after one myself. Hopefully, we'll hear later on, maybe even on Steve's own podcast, G.I. Joburg, that what his thoughts are at that price point and how much it's going to actually ship in to Australia for him. And that concludes the 54th Missile for the Masses. I have been your host, Gary. Thanks again to special guest Steve from G.I. Joburg. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, feel free to rate and review wherever you listened, as it only helps to grow and improve this podcast. The Chaplain's Assistance Motor Pod is hosted by Spotify for Podcasters And if you're listening on Spotify, you also have the ability to answer the question/poll that accompanies this. For more Chaplain's Assistance MotorPod, you can follow me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on Twitter or X, Instagram, Facebook, and sometimes even YouTube. You can also reach out to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com if email is your thing. The Chaplain's Assistance MotorPod is the strange, but not as strange, nerdy little brother of the pint, a pop culture podcast. The executive produced this podcast so I don't get thrown from Enterprise City's towers. Now that all of that is out of the way, just like Steve said, the final but most important missile of the masses, especially in these trying times, be decent to one another. See ya.